each weekday, a member of the community is invited to Coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Kuskokwim Delta. Sometimes light, sometimes serious, Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.
Hello, hello, hello up and down the Cusco. I'm also shouting out to the Yukon and the Coast. Grady Deaton here, Coffee at KYUK. As usual, excited and sharing my excitement with you. Fortunately, as usual, I've got my oatmeal and my coffee on my sideboard, ready to face the day, heart healthy, and, you know, just prepared. Also prepared, Katie Basil. How are you prepared for the day with this show this morning?
Good morning, Grady. I am prepared. I have a cup of coffee on my side here, and I'm ready to go.
Have a good show.
All right. Last week, during an especially frustrating moment at my house, my four-year-old son, Owen, looked at me and exclaimed, "Who can I play with? When will the coronavirus be over?" I think we can all relate to Owen in that we are asking the very same questions. When will this be over? When can we resume our normal daily activities? In an attempt to answer these questions, the New York Times recently published the findings from a survey of 511 infectious disease specialists asking when they personally expect to resume 20 activities of daily life, ranging from getting a haircut to attending a concert or sporting event. Here to talk about why these questions are so hard to answer is Alaska Public Health Nurse Donna Bean. Donna, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me, Katie. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to talk about this survey that the New York Times sent out to epidemiologists all over the country. And for those of you who haven't seen it, the survey asked participants to answer multiple choice questions about how long they expected it would be before they would feel comfortable resuming normal activities. And answers ranged from this summer to 3 months to never again. And Donna, you and 301 other epidemiologists refused to answer the survey and instead wrote a letter to the New York Times about why you felt you couldn't answer it. Why did you feel like you couldn't answer the survey questions?
Yeah, thanks for that question, Katie. So I understand, and we all understand, everyone's feeling the weight of having to be home and socially distanced from everyone for so long now. But science and the virus do not work on calendar and business days and weeks. So we felt that the work that we do, tracking data and looking at trends, isn't encapsulated in a calendar. So, like, if anyone who's seen the article or read it, the picture that accompanies it is an embroidered phrase, "Well, it depends." And so I'm just going to sort of read to you what we responded to the New York Times with. We understand the desire to frame the end of social distancing with certainty, but this does not accurately reflect how we make these decisions. Although each of us will return to various activities differently because our communities are unique, how we make these decisions consistently depends on, and we have four factors. One, the amount of COVID-19 in each of our communities. So to make this specific to Alaska, I can give the example of, for Anchorage. Anchorage, we have what's known as ongoing community transmission, meaning not something we can trace back to just one person who came from somewhere else. It's everywhere and anywhere. And so we have to be on a higher alert if it's all over the community. Whereas in a place that has not yet had a case, that's going to be a lot less COVID, zero to one, right? And so the risk in that community is different. Number two, the availability of widespread testing and contact tracing. So, for example, again, here in Anchorage, testing is still sort of limited because we have a higher population number, so it's limited to people who are symptomatic. Where out in Bethel, it's amazing. You guys are, you know, people are getting off the plane and able to get tested with or without symptoms. So that's different.
Mm-hmm.
Three, the accessibility of safe and effective treatments and vaccines. We still don't have that, right? And that's going to affect how and when people are going to be comfortable to go back and live semi-normal lives. And lastly, four, this is going to depend on how we perceive the risk of severe disease to ourselves and the people with whom we spend time. So, right, as a person maybe who lives alone or you have roommates who are healthy, have healthy immune systems, and you guys have talked about it, and you're willing to go out and you have similar friend groups, that's a different situation than someone who's a caregiver for an elderly, you know, aunt, uncle, grandparent at home. So those are the things that we had to weigh in. So, you know, how much COVID-19, how much testing we have, treatments and vaccines, and then the risk in our own personal, you know, social bubble. Mm-hmm. So all of those things are going to lead people to make different decisions. It's not something you can quantify with time.
Gotcha. And so these four indicators that you just read, they're in a letter that you sent to the New York Times. Can you just talk briefly about the group of epidemiologists that sent that letter? Who are you?
Yeah, it's really great. I was actually invited by a colleague in Florida she's an epidemiologist out there, now going to med school, but she had to come back to Florida. She's out in St. George. But it's just this group that coalesced on Facebook, and it's epidemiology and other public health rock stars. So where there's a lot of journal sharing, data sharing, reaching out for resources. It's an amazing, it spreads throughout the entire nation. Got members mm-hmm. from all 50 states that just are information sharing and bouncing ideas off of each other and really hoping to influence better decision making.
Mm. That's got to be such a great resource during this time. What normal daily activities have you resumed, if any?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, my life didn't really change that much. I do work a lot, so I kind of just go to work and come home. I go out biking now that the weather's better and hike. But I do activities within my household. I have a roommate, and then I have a small social bubble that's less than 10 people. And I practice social distancing. I wear my mask when I'm in public. I try to avoid, honestly, going to the grocery store as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So I still do that, but very rarely. And Dr. Ann Zink, actually, on her page on Facebook, has put out a video. She has put out several videos, but for people in Anchorage, she had said, you know, if you can order in your groceries, that's a better option. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, trying to limit my exposure, but I do have a small social circle.
Okay. And for those of you who don't know, Donna lived in Bethel and now lives in Anchorage. And so I'm curious, if you were still living in Bethel, where we currently don't have community transmission, would you practice social distancing differently than you currently are in Anchorage, and why?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would still commit myself to a small social bubble. I would still be a public health nurse, so I'd still be leading by example. But like we mentioned, you know, and that's one of the issues in this letter, the risk, you know, in Anchorage, honestly, is higher because we do have ongoing community-level transmission. Yesterday, we did have our 11th death. It was someone who was in Anchorage. It was an elder person. But, you know, Bethel hasn't reached those numbers, and there's a lot more screening coming in, and you're able to sort of grab people as they're coming in because you know where you're at, your baseline so far. You've tested a lot of people. I think, for example, going to the grocery store, I'm not sure if AC is still offering delivery. I'd probably mm-hmm. still go to the grocery store there. I'd still wear a mask, but I'd feel slightly more comfortable knowing that the numbers are lower in Bethel than in a place like Anchorage.
Right. Some participants in the New York Times survey said they would never greet people with hugs or handshakes again, and that was a low number that said that, but do you think there's potential that that's our future normal?
You know, Dr. Fauci from the NIH has also made similar remarks. And I think for me, that is just, I can't imagine, you know, if I ever have children having to explain, you know, we used to shake each other's hands and this no longer happens. I do think that maybe those activities will be modified. I'm a person who's a hugger. I like a strong handshake. I think maybe in our larger social interactions going forward, we'll modify those activities. But I don't think, you know, with your family and friend units, this is, we're social creatures. And even after the 1917-18 pandemic, there came a time when human beings resumed interactions that had been taking place before. So even now, you know, people who live in homes, they're hugging and shaking hands. So I hope it's not the new normal. I hope that we can figure a way through this. And I do think in my most positive moment that our future normal hopefully will still include human physical interaction, but will also be more socially just, carry more respect for science, healthcare workers, teachers, all of the essential workers that have kept our society together, and just overall that we think more broadly and just better about how we connect with each other, and we just continue to improve how we can care for our individuals and communities.
Mm. Yeah, it's hard to imagine that this time won't change all of us in fundamental ways. Some of the activities that are the most difficult to imagine resuming now for me are attending a sporting event or a concert. I love concerts. When will we know that it's okay to be in a crowd that size again? And we're talking thousands of people potentially.
Yeah. So I know, again, going back to Dr. Fauci, he had suggested we could still have a baseball season, just empty seats in the stadium and just film it on TV and test the players. But yeah, in person, in the United States, I'm unsure what our plan is. I know that a lot of the guidance coming out of CDC has either been delayed in being released or sort of hindered in its release with the current administration, but I can give the example of New Zealand, the country of 5 million people, often referenced as Kiwis. And apparently this weekend, the Super Rugby, I cannot pronounce the name of this, like, tournament, Aotearoa, I completely butchered that, but they play rugby. So this rugby match is going to be the first major sports league in the world to return from COVID-19 shutdown without crowd restrictions. And so the president there has been doing, or the prime minister there has done an amazing job. She has led the country through the coronavirus pandemic. They currently have no active coronavirus cases and no new cases as of Monday. So they have made the decision to return to a form of pre-pandemic normal. The country, since the pandemic began, the country only had 1,500 cases and 22 deaths in the entire nation. So they are able to go back to normal. Iceland has also made that decision. And interestingly enough, I read yesterday that Iceland is allowing opening up travel to an extent, but the United States is not allowed to travel to Iceland due to our numbers. So I think from the reading I did about international successes, and we've said that here, once we've got no incoming active cases, once we've got no more new cases, that's when we can start to look at those things. I think the U.S. is still very far from that, though.
Mm. And so two questions about the rugby match in New Zealand. Do you know, are they wearing masks at the rugby match? It's hard to imagine that they're not wearing masks. And then I'd like to hear just a little bit about what their prime minister did differently than what we've done in the U.S.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what I read, and I have some notes here, but apparently it's going to be, they've got a rotation for the teams, like 10 weeks home and away fixture list. They also won't have international teams, so it's just going to be in country. And one thing that's going to be different is as fans come in, they're going to be encouraged to use QR codes, scan their phone at the QR code, and that will enable effective contact tracing going forward.
Mm-hmm.
So that I thought was interesting, right? Yeah, and that's, I think, at the crux of it. I don't have a specific detail in front of me, but the Prime Minister overall and what they were able to do is just shut it down with contact tracing. They were very diligent, and we here at Public Health for the state of Alaska, we also engage in contact tracing. But when you're not able to test everyone, and things get complicated when we get people coming in from tons of different locations, you know, it's a lot more work and requires a lot more people power to get through that process. So that's why we're always hoping to catch it early on. And we did get a lot of help with the mandates that were restricting visitors from out of state. But now that those are lifted, it does give us a lot more work to do. So, yeah, I think that going forward, things like these QR codes are going to be something that that might be part of our new normal.
Interesting. That's helpful technology. We have about a minute left, Donna. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think the only thing I'd like to add is just like a personal, not personal, but, you know, as a public health nurse, I've seen up close and personal the toll this takes on not only public health and healthcare workers, industry workers, communities, individuals. I would just like to urge those who have the luck to be in good health and have, you know, a job and are able to sort of be mobile, to really take the time to think about the need for small social bubbles, social distancing, and masks. It's hard for everyone, but we do have the luxury of you have a roof over your head and you have access to the internet. You know, just hang in there, because what we're doing now is not just for ourselves, but for our communities, protecting the most vulnerable, the people who don't have strong immune systems, people of color, people in rural areas, and those who don't have ready access to the privileges and resources such as, you know, hospitals and ICUs and even basic transportation. So going forward, you know, Alaskans are really strong, and I just hope that we can hang in there a little longer.
Thank you so much, Donna, for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Katie.
Have a great day. That was Alaska Public Health Nurse Donna Bean telling us why it's so hard to answer the question, when will this be over? Grady, back to you.
Thank you. Have a great day. And it leaves me one thing to say to listeners, and that's what I love to tell you. Don't forget to be awesome to each other. Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Kuskokwim Delta.
Sometimes light, sometimes serious, Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.
If you'd like to suggest a guest or arrange to be on with us yourself, contact us at coffee@kyuk.org. Or call 543-3131 today.